जाए, गंग माई जून देवी की जाए, भक्ति देवी की जाए, तुलसी महारानी की जाए, समवेत भक्तवृंद की जाए, गौर प्रेमानंद ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरियस टू श्री गुरु एंड गौरंगा, ऑल ग्लोरियस टू श्री प्रभुपाद. Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Govani Bhutani, Vasesis, and Ram Paskajani, Sitam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sadhrujatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Panchakalpa Jivashtaki Pasindhya Vitapti Tanakavani Vajrayam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. In Radadesh, Belgium, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 4, the Hamsugayu Prayers, Text 33. So let's take a look at this verse. This is going to answer an old, old, old question by posing a contradiction. So we have, if you look at the second line, what do you see there? Rupo, yeah, and you see again on the third line also. Rupa, and on the second and third line you also see. What's the word repeated, second and third line?
Nama.
Nama. All right, but on the second line, you see it has an A in front of it, which means in Sanskrit, not. And Nama means what?
Name.
Name. Rupa means?
Form.
Okay, Bhagavan means?
God.
Okay, so Anama Rupo Bhagavan would mean?
Oh, yeah. God is without form and name.
God who has no form and name. But then you have, on the third line, Nama, Rupa, and what else?
Janma.
Janma and karma. Janma means birth, and karma means work, activities. Okay? And then you also have on the first line, what's the end of the first line? Pada. Pada means
feet.
Mula is the root, the bottom of your feet, or your feet that are at the bottom. So here you have this verse that's saying, God has no name and no form. Ah, but there's the bottoms of his feet. And he has a name, form, and birth and activities. And this is a conundrum. Does God have no name and no form? Or does he have a name and form and birth and activities and the bottoms of his feet? Wow, what is it? Okay. Yonu grahartam bhajantam padamulam
Yonu grahartam bhajantam padamulam
Anama rupo bhagavan ananta
Anam Rupo Bhagavan Ananta.
the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Anugraha Artham, to show his causeless mercy, Vajantam, to the devotees who always render devotional service, Padamulam, to his transcendental lotus feet, Anama, with no material name, Rupaha, or material form, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Anantaha, unlimited, all-pervading, and eternally existing, Namani, transcendental holy names, Rupani, his transcendental forms, Cha, also, Janma Karma Bihi, with his transcendental birth and activities, Beje, manifests, Saha, he, Mayam, unto me, Padamaha, the Supreme, proceed to, may he be merciful. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is inconceivably opulent, who is devoid of all material names, forms, and pastimes, and who is all-pervading, is especially merciful to the devotees who worship his lotus feet. Thus he exhibits transcendental forms and names with his different pastimes. May that Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose form is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss, be merciful to me. Purport. In regard to the significant word Anama Rupa, which means again what?
Nameless.
Nameless and formless, yes. Sri Siddhar Swami says, Prakrita Nama Rupa Rahitopi. The word Anama, which means having no name, indicates that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no material name. What is a material name? What do you mean by material name?
Temporary name.
Something temporary. Right? So, when I was born, my parents gave me a name, but then they didn't usually call me by that name. They called me by a nickname, right? And then when I got married, I got a new last name. When I got initiated, I got another name. And then people always wonder, what do I call? Do I call you Mataji? Do I call you idiot? What do I call? So I have so many names, but all those are designations. Yes. They're temporary designations. They don't really describe me. So there's a lot of empirical research as to how significant is your name. Does your name matter in terms of what kind of job you get, or how much income you make, or what other people think of you, right? There was some research recently done in America that if people apply for a job and they have a name that sounds like they're African-American, they're half as likely to get called for an interview as if they have a name that sounds like they're white American, even though they have the identical qualifications. Okay? But that's just superficial. That just means you can change your name and all of a sudden then people will like you. But you're the same person. So God has no material name like that. He doesn't have some material designation that's different from himself. So Srila Prabhupada is going to give some evidence here. Says, simply by chanting, going on with the purport, simply by chanting the name of Narayana to call his son, Ajamila attains salvation. This means that Narayana is not an ordinary, mundane name. It is non-material. So, as most of us know, Ajamila was raised very piously. The description of him as a young man is that he had complete control over his senses and he was peaceful. He was the epitome of a gentleman and the epitome of a learned person in the deepest sense of the term. And then through becoming attached to a prostitute, he lost all of his good qualities, became a criminal. He left his wife and moved in with this prostitute and started making his money by criminal means, abandoned his parents and so many things. But somehow, because of that childhood in piety, when he was dying, he called the name of his son, and he had named his son Narayana. Just like in the West, people name their children after the names of saints. They'll name their child John or Peter or Mary or something like that. And in some cultures even, they name their children Jesus. Yes, or Muhammad. So in Vedic culture, you gave your children names of saints or names of God. So he gave his child the name of God, Narayana, means the resting place of all the entities. And as he was dying, the servants of Yamaraj, who take sinful people to punishment, came to take the soul of the sinful man. So technically speaking, on record, he had committed a lot of sins for which he was subject to be punished. But simply because when he was dying, oh, Narayana! So immediately the agents of the Lord came and said, what are you doing? Why are you here to take this man? And they said, well, he's sinful. He's destined to be punished. And they said, you don't know anything about what's sinful and what's pious. Just because he said the name of Narayana, he's not a sinful person anymore. So I remember in 75 in Philadelphia, when Prabhupada was speaking on this point, and that section of the Bhagavatam hadn't been published yet. So the devotee who was reading the translation verse, he said, Ajamil cried out loudly three times, Narayana, Narayana, Narayana. And Prabhupada said, what is this three times? He said, I have not said three times. What is this three times? He said, once is sufficient, Narayana. So that's not ordinary. If you say one time the name of the Lord, and because of that one time the name of the Lord, the agents of punishment say, okay, you're no longer destined for hell. You're not dealing with a material name. If you bring a criminal into the court and charge him with murder and whatever, and the guy just calls out, you know, his wife's name, oh, Sally, save me! Nobody says, okay, no more punishment for you, goodbye. No. So it's not a material name. There's something else going on here. There's some other factor happening with the sound that one apparently makes with one's tongue and vocal cords and esophagus and lungs, which are all material, undoubtedly. That's not material. So Prabhupada goes on. The word anama, therefore, indicates that the names of the Supreme Lord do not belong to this material world. The vibration of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is not a material sound. And similarly, now he's going to go on to Arupa. The form of the Lord and his appearance and activities are all non-material. To show his causeless mercy to the devotees as well as to the non-devotees, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears in this material world with names, forms, and pastimes, all of which are transcendental. Transcendental, trans above the senses. They're above the senses, although they're apparently perceivable by the senses. What's going on here? Unintelligent men who cannot understand this think that these names, forms, and pastimes are material, and therefore they deny that he has a name or a form. Now here Prabhupada is going to be referring back to the previous verse, which Ajahnanda Maharaj so eloquently spoke on yesterday. He says, consider with scrutiny the conclusion of non-devotees who say that God has no name, and that of the devotees who know that his names are not material are practically the same. Prabhupada is saying here, non-devotees who say God has no name, and the devotees who say he has no material name, is basically the same. This is what was said by Daksha in the verse yesterday. That even those who think, oh, you know, God has no name, he has no form, he has no activities, we agree, he has no material name, he has no material form, he has no material activities. So in that sense, we can take it as the same. One of the statements like this are one of the reasons why I joined the Hare Krishna movement. That Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas have a vision of universality and a vision of seeing good, even apparently in someone who's saying the opposite. You know, I was never attracted growing up to people who said, we're the only ones who see the truth and everybody else sees ugly lies. You know, we have a monopoly on the truth. There's nothing good in anyone else. Anyone who doesn't agree with us 100% is going to hell eternally. You know, there's and then there's the sects of the sects of the sects of the sects, you know, where the Lutherans who have a doctrine before 1648 and the Lutherans who have a doctrine before 1648, you know, which ones are you? And there's this list of dogma, and okay, you have to tick off, I believe in this dogma and I believe in that dogma, otherwise you're condemned. And here Srila Prabhupada is saying that those who say the opposite, generally we consider such people great offenders to the Lord. Like if I went to you and said, you don't have any name, you don't have any form, you don't have any activities, you don't have any personality, it's insulting, isn't it? Don't we feel insulted when people treat us as if we're a non-person? I think that's one of the greatest insults, to be treated as if we're not a person. Hey, I have feelings, I'm a person, don't treat me like an object, isn't it? Yes? Yes, isn't it? Yes? You see me? Yes? Okay. So this is a great insult to God. If you say to God, you don't have any name, you have no form, you have no activities, you're not a person, you have no feelings, you have no senses. And yet Prabhupada is saying here, oh, they're saying practically the same thing as we're saying. Because we agree they have no material name. This is also some indication of how, if we're going to be bringing the world to God consciousness, if we're going to be creating a peaceful society, if we're going to be doing what we call preaching in the Hare Krishna movement, although the word preaching perhaps has a negative connotation of I'm better than you, but if we're going to be spreading knowledge and peace and love of God, that we do this, first of all, by connecting with what's similar with other people, rather than by immediately hitting them over the head with what's different. And if you say, yes, yes, we agree with you on this, now let's go to the next step. So we see that Srila Prabhupada is very expert at this. We saw Srila Prabhupada in his dealings with people. He was very expert at first getting some connection with people and then taking them to the next step. Okay, going on here. This is a very long purport, which is why if I just read through the... I find when there's very long purports, if you just read through the purport, people just kind of go and glaze over. All right. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no material name, form, birth, appearance, or disappearance, but nevertheless, he takes his birth, Janma, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 4:6. Ajopi san avyatyatma, bhutanam isharopi san prakritim swam adishtaya, sambhavanyatramaya. Although the Lord is unborn, Aja, and his body never undergoes material changes, he nevertheless appears as an incarnation, maintaining himself always in the transcendental stage, Shuddhasattva. Thus he exhibits his transcendental forms, names, and activities. That is a special mercy toward his devotees. Others may continue merely arguing about whether the Absolute Truth has a form or not. But when a devotee, by the grace of the Lord, sees the Lord personally, he becomes spiritually ecstatic. So this is also very nice. So people who are not having a direct vision or a direct experience of transcendence simply go on arguing from their material position. Does God have form? Does he have not form? Does he have form? Does he have not form? Is there a God? Is there not a God? What is he like? And they're just simply arguing and arguing and arguing. But the devotee actually walks in the door and meets God and feels ecstasy and therefore is not inclined just to argue and argue and argue. What is the ultimate proof? The ultimate proof is experience. It's interesting. We talk about what is proof? What is evidence? How do you know there is a God? How do you know what God is like? How do you know what the purpose of life is? And we talk about three ways of acquiring knowledge: prajaksha, anuman, and shabda. Prajaksha is experience. I know there's a microphone here because I can hear the changes in my voice when I use it or not. I have some experience, and I can feel it and I can see it. So that's prajaksha. And also anuman, logic. Not only can I feel and see it, but I can tell the difference in my voice when I use it, or right? So that's logic. Oh, it's doing something. It's amplifying my voice and changing the quality of my voice. And then there's shabda. Someone says, that's a microphone. And if you turn it on like this and use it like this, it will do that. But in one sense, we talk about the ultimate authority is hearing. But in another sense, the ultimate authority is experiencing. The ultimate authority is experiencing. If someone just says God has a form, God has a name, God has activities that are all transcendental, So if you have faith in the person who tells you that, then you can accept even if you don't have experience, but ultimately conviction is going to come through experience. Isn't that a fact? Like, I've never been to Japan, so I believe that there's a Japan by hearing. I know people who've been there, I know people who live there, I can see photographs of it. It's on all of the maps and the globes given to me by my teachers and by the governments. I mean, unless I really think there's an intense conspiracy, you know, my reasonable conclusion is that there's a Japan. But do I really know? I mean, do I really know unless I go there? I don't really know unless I go there. What to speak of something that you really can't understand at all except through experience. So Bhaktisiddhanta gives the example of honey. You have a jar of honey, and someone can tell me, well, it's sweet and it's thick and it's smooth, and I can look at it through the jar and turn the jar back and forth, and we can have an argument. What is it? It's probably saying, you know, arguing. But if I really want to know what it is, I have to taste it. Prabhupada talks about how the chemists talk about, I forget what it is, some chemical that's poisonous and has no taste. And he says, how do they know? As soon as someone eats it, they immediately die. So Prabhupada's saying here, you know, you can argue or not. Others may continue merely arguing, but when a devotee, by the grace of the Lord, sees the Lord personally, he becomes spiritually ecstatic. And this Krishna consciousness movement is existing to give people the facility for that experience. We're not simply interested in giving people philosophy and knowledge. Oh yes, there's a God, he has a non-material name and form and pastimes. But for contacting that spiritual God. Going on. Unintelligent persons say that the Lord does nothing. That would be very boring, wouldn't it? Actually, he has nothing to do. But nevertheless, he has to do everything. Because without his sanction, no one can do anything. The unintelligent, however, cannot see how he is working and how the entire material nature is working under his direction. His different potencies work perfectly. And here Prabhupada's quoting from the Svetasvara Upanishad 6.8, Natastya karyam, karanam cha vidyate, natat samas chabyad dikas chadristyate, parashtya shaktir vividaya vishruyate, swabhaviti janma bala kriyacha. These are energies, janma, jantis, sorry. Jnana bala kriyacha. Jnana is knowledge, bala is strength, and kriya is activities. Parashtya shaktir vividaya vishruyate. Krishna has all energies to which he can do everything. So though he has nothing to do, he's the richest, most powerful person, he doesn't have to do anything. So he's doing everything through his energies. And Prabhupada says he has nothing to do personally, for since his potencies are perfect, everything is immediately done by his will. Persons to whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not revealed cannot see how he is working, and therefore they think that even if there is a God, he has nothing to do or has no particular name. Actually, the Lord's name already exists because of his transcendental activities. The Lord is sometimes called Gunakarma Nama because he is named according to his transcendental activities. For example, Krishna means all-attractive. This is the Lord's name because his transcendental qualities make him very attractive. As a small boy, he lifted Govardhan Hill, and in his childhood he killed many demons. Such activities are very attractive. And therefore he is sometimes called Giridhari, Madhusudana, Agadusudana, and so on. Prabhupada saying here how these are very attractive. I was just talking yesterday to my daughter-in-law. We were talking about publishing. And she's asked me for a long time, since she has 9 children. She says, can we please publish more cardboard books for my little children so that I can give them the books and they won't tear them up? She said, they're not really concerned about how beautiful the illustrations are or just how fancy the text is. They just want to have something that's about Krishna, because as soon as it's about Krishna, they want to read it over and over and over again. So Krishna is so attractive, even the little child, right? We found with our Learn to Read books. So most books that teach children how to read are not very interesting. I don't know what all of you use to learn to read, but I learned to read with books like See Dick Run, Run Dick Run, See Sally Run, Run Sally Run, See Spot Run, Run Spot Run, Run Dick Run Sally Run Spot. So nobody goes to those books and reads them for pleasure, yes? Nobody said, nobody says, Mommy, 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 I want to read the book about Dick and St. Jane and Sally. You know? And, but we found that when we made books to teach children how to read that were about Krishna, that it was very different. That the children wanted to read those books as reading books. And not only did we find that the children wanted to read the books as reading books, but I kept getting letters and phone calls from people who say, I can't get the books away from my husband to give them to my children. So Krishna's very attractive. Krishna's activities are very attractive, and we find that all the kinds of activities that attract us in this world are something that's a reflection of Krishna's activities. You know, we're attracted, like Prabhupada says here, he killed demons. So these are some of the most popular movies and books, aren't they? Demon killing, bad guy killing. That the hero goes out, the James Bond or Superman or whatever it is, you know, goes out and kills the demons, yes? And they make millions and millions or billions of dollars. So it's very attractive that Krishna's killing the demon. Or lifting Govardhan Hill, doing something, having superhuman powers. Being able to pick up, again, that's very attractive. People want to hear about someone or read about someone or watch somebody who has superhuman power. So therefore, Krishna's very attractive. Because he acted as the son of Nandamarsh, he's called Nanda Tanuja. These names already exist, but since non-devotees cannot understand the names of the Lord, he is sometimes called Anama or nameless. This means that he has no material names. All his activities are spiritual, and therefore he has spiritual names. So here Prabhupada is giving one reason they're spiritual, that they're eternal. They're not a temporary designation, and they're in relationship to who he actually is. As we were saying, material names, they have nothing to do with who I am. Or even if we call this cup, there's no relation between the English name cup and the thing cup. There's nothing to do with it. It's irrelevant. And this object has so many other names and so many languages, but none of them have any relationship to the thing. It's just a temporary designation. And I mean, we have some words, onomatopoeic words, where the name and the thing is the same, like boom and zap and, you know. But generally, the names and the thing, it's just arbitrary. Whereas with Krishna, his spiritual names are actually him. The names are always there, and they're who he is. Generally, less intelligent men are under the impression that the Lord has no form. The Prabhupada talked about names, I was going to talk about form. Because it was Anama Rupa. Therefore, he appears in his original form as Krishna, Satchitananda Vigraha, to carry out his mission of participating in the battle of Kurukshetra and pastimes to protect the devotees and vanquish the demons. Paritranaya sadhana vinashaya chaduskritam. This is his mercy. For those who think that he has no form and no work to do, Krishna comes to show that indeed he works. He works so gloriously that no one else can perform such uncommon acts. Although he appeared as a human being, he married 16,108 wives, which is impossible for a human being to do. So, of course, it's possible for a human being to technically marry 16,108 wives. But Krishna married them all on the same day by expanding his form and having 16,100 weddings, where he was there. And in each house he was there, each of the women thought, oh, Krishna's just my husband. So no human being can do that, right? Even a human being who has one wife, they can't spend all the time with that one wife. The main complaint people have in a marriage is, I don't see enough of you, you're too busy. So, but with Krishna, he's able, because he doesn't have a material form, because he's everywhere, he's able to simultaneously have a relationship with thousands and thousands of living entities. And each living entity is understanding the Lord is having a relationship only with me. The Lord performs such activities to show people how great he is, how affectionate he is, and how merciful he is. Isn't this nice? Great, affectionate, and merciful. Although his original name is Krishna, Krishna is too Bhagavan Swayam. He acts in unlimited ways, and therefore, according to his work, he has many, many thousands of names. Yonu Grahartam Bhajitam Padavulam Anam Arupo Bhagavan Ananta Namani Yupani Chajanmakarmabir Beje Samhayam Padama Prasiditu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is inconceivably opulent, who is devoid of all material names, forms, and pastimes, and who is all-pervading, is especially merciful to the devotees who worship his lotus feet. Thus he exhibits transcendental forms and names with his different pastimes. May that supreme personality of Godhead, whose form is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss, be merciful to me. So the basic principle of life is that we're all looking for relationships. We're all looking for relationships. We want relationships that involve dealing between one person and another. Just like that, I just got an email yesterday. There's a friend of mine who's thinking about getting married, and they were looking at the astrological charts to do a comparison, and the astrologer said, I don't think this would be a good marriage because both of you are practically identical. Said, at first you think you would love each other, but after a while you get tired of each other because you feel like you're having a relationship just with yourself. So we want a relationship between two individuals. Whatever, we want friendships, we want serving people, we want romantic relationships, we want relationships where we help people and guide people. Where every if you examine every kind of pleasure that we experience, it's a relationship. Even if it's a relationship between our tongue and some food, or between our eyes and some beautiful mountain, or there's some relationship going on. Now, of course, these relationships cause us a lot of pain. However much pleasure our relationships give us, they also give us a lot of pain. They give us a lot of grief. Even our most wonderful relationships have some element of suffering in them, that we're wondering, does this person really like me, or really who's in charge? Or, you know, there's always some doubt, and then there's some difficulty, and there's some tension. At a certain point, the relationship breaks, ultimately through death, but even before death. There may be some break in our relationship. And there's always some fear of the break in our relationship, and there's always some dissatisfaction that the relationships are imperfect. So we are seeking happiness through relationships, and we are seeking happiness through the perfect relationship. And these relationships are expressed through individuality and personality and form. How do you express a relationship without individuality and personality and form? Is that possible? Can you have a relationship with just the formless? I mean, even if you want to think about the sky as formless, and you can have a relationship with the sky by seeing the sky and feeling the sky, it's not actually formless, is it? The sky is made up of little molecules of stuff. It has a boundary. So the ultimate place we're looking for this relationship is, of course, with God, who is perfect. So how could the all-perfect have no name and no form and no personality and no activities? How can you then have a relationship? How is that possible? So we find that there's many religions in the world that talk about love of God, and the same will say that God has no name and no form and no activities. Now, of course, then they also describe his names and forms and activities in their scriptures. Just like in the Bible, I'm not very familiar with the Quran, but in the Bible, it talks about how God wrote on the tablets of stone with his finger. Well, gosh, that means he has a finger. Yeah, must mean he has a finger. Like Prabhupada's talking about Govardhan Hill, that Krishna lifted this hill with his finger. So, being, you know, rather simple, we look at that and say, well, that must mean he has a finger. I mean, if I told you I wrote this with my hand, it would be rather odd for you to say, well, you must be speaking poetically. You probably did not really have a hand. And that's a kind of odd interpretation. Or we, just like we have in the Bhagavatam, that God shook the hand of Brahma as a friend does with another friend. So that also was in Exodus in the Bible, that Moses saw God face to face as a friend speaks to another friend. So that must mean that God has a face. How can you speak to God face to face if God has no face? How can he write on the tablets with his finger if he has no finger? And although he has nothing to do in the sense that he has no needs, so I may have to have a job because I need a salary, and I may have to get a salary because I need to eat, because if I don't eat, I die. But God doesn't have to eat, so he doesn't have to have a job. He doesn't have to go looking for a job to have something to do. So he has nothing to do in that sense. But even in this world, people who are very rich and have nothing to do, they still do things for pleasure. So God, therefore, we call them pastimes, although in the verse here it's karma, which means literally activities. We also call it lila or krida, pastimes, you know, in our normal society, our average human society. We talk about pastimes, they're sports. What's a pastime in America? We say the great American pastime is baseball. A pastime, something you do to pass the time, something that's a sport. Krida, play. It's play. Nobody's going to die from want of baseball. It's not, you don't have to play baseball. People play it and they wash it simply for pleasure. So the Lord is like that. Everything he's doing is simply for pleasure. There's no compulsion. Right? You were asking that last time, right? What about things we do? Yes, Dindale? What about work we do out of duty? We're not feeling any rasa. So Krishna has no work he's doing where there's no rasa. For Krishna, everything is rasa. Everything is taste. Everything is pleasure. So actually this is described in all the scriptures of the world, that God has activities, that God has a form, that God has a name. Right? Even the word God is a kind of name, isn't it? Even those who talk about God not having a name, they'll still say, "Oh Lord," which is also a kind of name. It's something so that you're calling, the person that you're calling knows that you're calling them. So if one really wants this relationship, if really one wants a perfect relationship, one should find the perfect person who's not material. What does it mean to be material? Here this Prabhupada discusses over and over and over again. Material, not material, material, not material, material, not material. What do we mean by material? Why is it that material won't satisfy us, but only spiritual will satisfy us? Anybody want to define material? Yeah? It's what?
It's temporary.
It's temporary. And we're looking for relationships that are eternal. When I was a little girl, my mother used to sing this song. "You're the one for me eternally." She used to like to sing Hollywood songs and things like that. Right? Isn't that very common in love songs? "I'm going to love you eternally." That's what we're looking for. "I'll always love you."
Whitney Houston.
Huh?
One lady, she died last year. Whitney Houston, I think she was singing that song.
Oh, she was singing that song? Okay. So there's so many songs like that. "I will always love you. I love you eternally." And they lived happily ever after. Forever and ever and ever. Because that's what we want. And we don't want just some eternal love that's boring. We want some eternal love that keeps getting better. Right? So something material is temporary, and then it also gets worse. Have you noticed that about material things? They don't get better, they get worse. And just like this material body, for a while when you're a child, it seems like it keeps getting better and better, but then it peaks and it starts getting worse. It's quite interesting. You know, when you're a little kid, you're like, you're always inflating your age. "Well, I'm 11, almost 12. And then at a certain point, you deflate your age. Because it gets worse. It starts falling apart. You know, sometimes people say to me, "Irina, have you lost weight?" I said, "No, it's just gravity pulling my face down." You know, that's true. So material things get worse. They fall apart. You know, you get a new car, and you have a relationship with your new car, and then after a while, there's not, the spark is gone. Have you noticed that? So something material is temporary, okay? And it gets worse. It falls apart. It loses its zap. You know, your ability to experience rasa from something decreases the more that you have it with material. So spiritual is eternal, and the rasa keeps increasing and increasing and increasing and increasing. The taste, the relationship, the feeling, it keeps increasing in quality and in quantity. And again, that's what we're looking for. We're looking for something that's going to increase. We're looking for some sort of love that will get better and better, that the more and more I use my computer, the more I'll like it. The longer I'm married to you, the more I'll love you.
know, the longer I stay in Belgium, the more I'll like it. I mean, that's what we're aspiring towards. So, okay, some other differences between material and spiritual. Yes?
Material things take us away from Krishna.
Material things take us away from Krishna. I think that's a tautological definition. It goes in a circle. That if we're defining Krishna as spiritual, and then I ask the difference, and you say material things are taking away from the spiritual, it's kind of material, it's not spiritual. That was a good try. Yes? Oh, okay. So something material is made out of modes. You know, the scientists talk about that everything's made out of protons, neutrons, and electrons. I've always been curious if they correspond to goodness, passion, ignorance, if like proton is in goodness, and electron is in passion, or something like that. That would be interesting. But we understand that everything's made out of goodness, passion, ignorance. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that there's nothing in the whole creation that's not goodness, passion, ignorance. And we compare this, of course, to three colors, red, yellow, and blue, that combine together, slightly different colors with light, that combine together to form so many different colors. So really, everything in this world, kind of like a film, that has just three colors projecting on a screen, and those three colors projecting on a screen can create, practically speaking, an infinite number of stories. They create practically an infinite number of forms and stories, right? Just the three colors, and then there's a story about animals, and there's a love story, and there's an adventure story, and there's, yes? There's rivers, and there's mountains, and there's... But it's really only three colors. So everything in this that's material is really just this mixing of these modes of goodness, passion, ignorance. Therefore, they're not what they appear to be. And we call this world the world of names. Exactly like the images on the screen are not what they appear to be. It's not really a mountain. It's not really somebody jumping off a helicopter. It's not really, you know, people getting married. It's not really tigers running through the jungle. It's not any of those things. It's just three lights on the screen, or like our dreams. You know, we're dreaming, this is it. But it's not. It's just electrical impulses in the brain. So everything material is not what it appears to be. It's real. I mean, a film is real. The lights are real. But it's not what it appears to be. So this is not eternally a table. It appears to be a table, but that's a very temporary configuration. Before it was a table, it was a tree. Before it was a tree, it was? Well, the whole body of the tree, what was it before it was a tree?
Seed.
A seed? Yeah, but everything wasn't in the seed. Earth. The whole body, where did it come from? The seed had the directions.
From the earth.
From the earth. So it was made, it was earth and?
Water
and?
Sun.
So it was earth, water, and sun. And this was going to become again. At some point, this is going to become again water and soil, and if it's burned, it will again become fire. So therefore, you can't say it isn't what it is. It's just the modes of nature interacting in a certain way. Whereas spiritual is what it is. Something that's spiritual is not just some temporary coming together of modes that assumes a particular shape and form and characteristic for a moment of eternal time and then is something else. It actually is what it is. So it may appear that Superman is very attractive when he kills a demon, but it's not what it is. It's just the lights. Whereas when Krishna's killing a demon, if he really is killing a demon, it really is what it is. There's substance, it's reality. I mean, it's quite interesting, even when people have out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, one of the most commonly stated conclusions is that, wow, when I was out of my body, everything was more real. People will say that very commonly. They'll say, I understood that what I was experiencing in the body was like a dream, and once I got out of the body, that was the actual reality. And what's fascinating is that generally when people have these out-of-body experiences, they're still in the subtle body. They're still in the mind. They're not even on the spiritual plane. They're on a subtle material plane. And therefore we find that those who experience, as Prabhupada is saying here, to experience the spiritual plane, they know that God has a spiritual form. That is the reality. So the difference between matter and spirit is matter is it's an illusion. Not an illusion in the sense of non-existence, but it's not what we think it is. It's not what we think it is. Like a dream is not what we think it is. A movie is not what we think it is. It appears to be one thing and actually is something else. Whereas the spiritual is what it appears to be. It's genuine, it's real. And that's also the kind of relationships we want. We want relationships that are eternal, we want relationships that keep getting better, and we want relationships that are authentic. Yesterday, Marge was talking about masks, and it made me think of the project I'm working on right now, Manashiksha of Raghunath Das Goswami. And ongoing theme in there is to give up deceit. And we talk about Krishna as Param Sattva Dhimahi. He's the supreme truth, the absolute truth. We refer to Krishna as the absolute truth, what is absolutely true. And Raghunath Das Goswami says this deceit is like a very unchaste woman, a very promiscuous woman, and one of her lovers is named Pretense. So as soon as one gets this deceitfulness, this desire to be something that we're not, then we pretend so many things, we put on so many masks. You know, one of our illustrations is going to be a tree, and at the bottom of the tree it says deceit and the desire for fame and honor, and on the tree branches are going to be so many different masks. And this woman and her lover dancing, and as he's wearing a mask, and so many masks on the wall. So most of our relationships are simply a mask. I put on a mask and you put on a mask. And our relationship is between my mask and your mask. And now with society, that is increasing and increasing and increasing, isn't it? That people even, you know, that through the computer they even pretend to be. I mean, even this body is not who I am. And then they have a pretense of the pretense. They pretend to be someone they're not, and they're relating with someone who pretends to be someone that they're not. It's not authentic. And generally, when we really find out the person behind the mask, we don't like them. We don't even like ourselves behind the mask. But our relationships with Krishna are authentic. Krishna is what he is, and our relationship on the spiritual platform is where we are what we are. I was just hearing Prabhupada say that because God is all good, we are all good. So they are authentic. So the purpose of our Krishna consciousness movement is to have spiritual relationships with God and with all other living beings. And that can only happen if we understand that God has a name and a form and activities. I cannot have a relationship with the nameless, formless, activityless. I can't. There's no relationship. And therefore there's no rasa. And you find that people who preach that God has no name and no form, they end up regretfully, painfully going back to material relationships in disappointment as their source of happiness. Now, what's really nice is that when we establish a spiritual relationship with the spiritual name, form, and pastimes of the spiritual absolute truth, once we establish that relationship, it spiritualizes all of our so-called material relationships. Because what makes a relationship material, ultimately, is simply the concept that it's separate from Krishna. That's ultimately the definition of material, which goes back to your wonderful statement. Ultimately, the definition of material is the illusion that something is separate from Krishna. Of course, what's really far out, as a little side note, is that illusory energy is also Krishna's energy. So the energy which allows one to think that something is separate from Krishna, that energy is also Krishna's energy. So you can't get away from it. The energy you use for illusion is also Krishna's energy. That's amazing. But anyway, once one establishes our relationship with Krishna, then we see that everything is ultimately spiritual. Sarva Kalamitam Brahma, as we were reading in the previous verses. Everything ultimately has this relationship with Krishna. Even the temporary material energy is also Krishna's energy. And therefore, one can experience spiritual rasa when using that energy in his service. So that is our purpose in our Hare Krishna movement. Our purpose is not to go on arguing about does God have a form and does it have this, whatever we like to argue about. That's not the purpose. We can leave all the arguers outside the room. Let them stay outside the door, and we should enter into the door and come into the party and have our direct experience. Let them argue about what honey tastes like. Let's open the jar and drink the honey. Let everyone argue. Does God have a form? Does God not have a form? What's matter? What's spirit? How do we understand everything? And let's go and be with Krishna. As Prabhupada says, the purpose of this Krishna conscious movement is to join the pleasure dance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, it says that in a purport to a song. So, that's what we should be doing. We should be going for that experience. And the purpose of our Krishna consciousness movement is to give as many living entities as possible, not even you, only human beings, but to give as many people as possible that real taste of that real relationship with the spiritual reality. And that is the purpose of our chanting the names of God. That's the purpose of our hearing the Bhagavatam. That's our purpose of our taking prasadam, our food offered to Krishna. That's our purpose of our worshipping the Lord in his deity form. That's our purpose of maintaining the building. And everything that we're doing is to have that genuine, authentic relationship with someone who has a spiritual name and spiritual form and spiritual activities. And that is how we can gauge our progress in life, whether or not we're successful in life, as Prabhupada says so nicely here. Others may continue really arguing about whether the Absolute Truth has form or not, but when a devotee, by the grace of the Lord, sees the Lord personally, he becomes spiritually ecstatic. So that's how to tell whether or not we're successful. Have I become spiritually ecstatic in a genuine relationship with the spiritual Lord? Questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions? Yes?
Yeah, I recently spoke with a devotee about this matter life.
Mm.
And we came to the conclusion that this matter life is just crop. Because there is
it's just what?
Crop. You know, there is anxiety, there is stress, there is separation, all these bad feelings.
Uh-huh.
So this matter life is basically not so nice. But is it not the same in the spiritual world? Because
then you're really stuck. Then what are you going to do?
Because Radha is also in anxiety to see Krishna. She's also, she feels separation of Krishna. She feels, so it's the same.
Better just merge into the Brahman then.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we're thinking, okay, if I enter into spiritual life, then there's also anxiety. But anxiety can be pleasurable. Of course anxiety can be pleasurable. People are paying billions of dollars to buy books and watch movies that put them in anxiety. And play games, yes? And watch sports simply so they can feel anxiety. And I asked one person who watches a lot of sports, why do you watch sports? And he said, because you don't know what's going to happen. He said, if you go to the movies, you know the good guy's going to win, you know. So when you watch sports, you just never know who's going to win, how you're going to win. And they're enjoying that anxiety. Yes? And people are watching movies. And I mean, I remember when I was a kid how Superman would get tied up. And you wouldn't know how somebody would come with, what was it, kryptonite, right? And you'd be like, oh no, Superman's going to die. And you're feeling anxiety. But and you're enjoying. That's what people do for enjoyment. Or when I was a kid, I used to like to ride roller coasters. Did you ever ride a roller coaster? You know what a roller coaster is? Where it goes up, 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 and then it goes down, 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 down. There's rides in the amusement park. Why do you ride it? To feel anxiety. That's one of the seven secondary rasas, fear. Now, materially, all of the rasas are not real. So on a material level, whether you're feeling joy or you're feeling anxiety, or whether you're feeling friendship, or whether you're feeling romance, or whether you're feeling chivalry, it's all just three colored lights. It's not real. And it doesn't touch you. It's something external to you. But spiritually, you, we, the soul, are actually feeling it. And it's actually happening. So materially, If you're feeling some anxiety watching a sports game, it's not real. I mean, it's real in the sense that it exists, but it's not what you think is happening. It's just the moments are moving in a particular way, and you're identifying with it. And therefore, it's not satisfying. But suppose it was real, but safe. Because you're eternal. You're a soul. You can't be hurt. You can't die. You can't be hurt by water or wind or fire or anything. And God's eternal. So you're eternal and God's eternal and nobody can be hurt. And Krishna's always going to win and you're always going to win and everything's always going to be great. So there's a foundation of ultimate peace and security. But yet you're experiencing real anxiety and real chivalry and real joy and real anger and real disgust even. It's one of the rasas. Huh? So that's what we want. We want the real thing. So those are all varieties of ecstasy. I always give the example, in Dubai we have a restaurant where we serve all different kinds of ice cream. I don't think we have 33 flavors, but anyway, we have all different kinds of flavors, and we have sitapal. You know what sitapal is? That's all right, it's fine. Prabhupada says, all glories to the assembled devotees, includes the children. So do you know what sitapal ice cream is? And sitapal is a custard apple. So they have sitapal ice cream, they have chiku ice cream, they have, you know, kiwi ice cream. But it's all ice cream. You follow? So in the spiritual relationships, there are all these rasas. There's friendship, there's conjugal, there's parental, there's anger, there's grief. But it's all bliss. It's all sweet. It's all love. It's all real. Okay, I think we have to end now. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.